Welcome, everyone. This is the early career member program workshop session on mentoring, seeking, selecting, and or working with a mentor. This morning we have four panelists for the session. I'm going to go through and introduce each one that's on the panel. And as I introduce them, if they would just come up and just sit at the table here. And then following each one, we'll give some advice on mentoring, the subject of mentoring, and all that goes into that. And then following their discussions, each about 10 minutes or so, then we'll have some time for questions, and hopefully there'll be questions and time for some answers, question answer session, as then we wrap up the session. So I'll start off here with Dr. John Clapp. Dr. Clapp retired from Tessenderlo Kerley in 2007. As Director of Agronomy, after 32 years with the fertilizer industry, he was responsible for agronomic evaluation of ag products and sales support. He received his doctorate from North Carolina State University in soil fertility and plant physiology. Then also Dr. Indy Braden. Dr. Braden is professor at Southeast Missouri State University in the Department of Agriculture. Dr. Braden received a Bachelor of Science degree from College of the Ozarks in Missouri, Master's of Science from the University of Arkansas at Fayetteville, major in crop production, and then a doctorate from Iowa State University in Ames, Iowa, major in crop production and physiology. She is formerly chair, past chair of the Early Career Member Committee. I believe that was 2006 to 2008. Then also Dr. Lori Unruh-Snyder is assistant professor in the agronomy department at Purdue University. Dr. Snyder earned her Bachelor of Science Entomology and Master of Science Crop Science degrees at Cornell University and Doctorate degree Crop Science from North Carolina State University. Dr. Unruh-Snyder began her professional career at North Carolina State University as a lecturer while working on her PhD in Crop Science. After North Carolina State University, she lectured at the University of Florida from 2004 2007. Currently, Dr. Snyder is involved in international agricultural developments in both Honduras and Costa Rica. Her research focus is in sustainable agricultural farming practices focusing on forage production systems. She is active professionally in the Crop Science Society of America and the American Society of Agronomy. Her major efforts are working with internationalizing the curriculum of agronomy, developing online interactive teaching modules, and advising her students in agronomy. She has been a member of American Society of Agronomy and Crop Science Society of America for 11 years and was a part of the Golden Opportunity Scholars since the beginning as a co-chair of the committee and has also mentored several students over the years for the program. And then our fourth panelist, Dr. Richard Cooper, retired as a GS-15 research agronomist in 2003 after a 40-year career in soybean breeding and production research. He is recognized as a world leader in soybean high-yield research, obtaining replicated research plots, yields in excess of 100 bushels per acre, and has served as a soybeans research consultant in many countries. He is a fellow of the American Society of Agronomy and Crop Science Society and recipient of the American Society of Agronomy Agronomic Achievement Award for Crops and the Agronomic Research Award. Because of his concern about the inadequate training we give graduate students and early career scientists about the reality of the politics they will encounter as they pursue their degrees, as they pursue their career, he has recently published a book based on his experience and observations entitled An Introduction to the Academic Politics in Agricultural Research. And he is here today and his would like to do a little book signing and books were for sale at the end of this session. So with that, if all the panel members would come forward and I'll turn it over to the panel members.
That was with Allied Chemical, but then when they were bought out by PCS, and then later to Simla Curly, which is based in Phoenix, Arizona. Had another advisor that even though he lived in California and I lived in New York, we communicated not daily, but certainly weekly, and they developed a respect on both of us. And then even new salesmen that came into the program, I guess I always felt like that I needed to travel with them, and that was an objective that I had to get to know them and to travel with them, to learn about them. And during that period of time, I know I spent, we introduced a new product here for the cotton market back, it's been 15 years ago now. And this salesman, he was out of Illinois, lived in a place called El Dorado. And he, since Texas has roughly 45% of the cotton acreage in the United States, he moved down to Austin and spent 2 months during the summer, brought his wife and daughter down and rented an apartment. And I traveled with him in here in Texas, not for that time, but I'd come down and spend a week with him. And he later became, one of our major sales rep for the product that we had for use on cotton. And then with other, Tosimla was a very small company. We had about six salesmen that represented the United States. And I lived in North Carolina, then I would travel. We had one guy in Pennsylvania that covered the Northeast, and I would travel with him, or he would go to his, he had the whole, basically the eastern part of the United States, because most of our people were located in the West. But he would go to Florida, and of course I would meet and travel with him. So it was not only a way to get to know the new salesman, but also to provide, training for them and bring them up to date on the products that the company had, so that was very beneficial, and became a good relationship with the people that were entering the industry. I think I'll stop there. A little bit of my background, and even though I'm retired now.
Hi, I'm Annie Braden, and I have been asked to be a part of this panel. I'm very honored to, so thanks for the invitation. Because my experience in working with early career members, this was a really important part of what we've been working on for quite some time, trying to get insights and input for those of you who might be early in your career, or maybe you're in your career and you're trying to figure out maybe some support systems as to where you're going in your career. Part of my experiences, of course, you're going to hear this probably from all of us, is our major professors were very important to us as mentors, and I was very lucky in having different aspects of major professors when I was in graduate school. But when I actually sat down and I thought about who would I start with as my mentor, I thought, well, I can't really pick just that one because he was different in this way, and I can't really pick her because she's different in that way. And so I kept going back and back and back, and I started with my family, that my family was the support in encouraging me and telling me, forming me into who I happen to be and where I would actually start in why on earth I am in the world of education. So as part of where I'm at in perspective of the teaching scholar model at our university, I went back to my grandparents and my parents, who were all teachers, and their interactions in where you should go, why you make the extra effort for your students, and that aspect. And then, of course, academically, I've had Chuck West at University of Arkansas was extremely beneficial for me as a mentor, because he worked me through the whole process of these meetings, of developing research ideas, working together on projects with the faculty members side by side. I went to Iowa State from there, and for my advisor at Iowa State, I had Ken Moore as my advisor at Iowa State, and Ken had a different focus. Ken was a focus focus of research, and you were pretty much on your own, but he was there if you needed him. And that was a good mentor for me, as in freedom of you're fine, you're doing just what you need to be, and for supporting me, it was the off-the-scenes kind of support, but I'm here if you need me. I also, at Iowa State, wanted to teach, so I sought out one of my committee members, and that would be Mary Wienhoff, because her passion for teaching kind of matched a little where I had the goal of where I was going. And so we linked up, and in choosing my mentors, I can't necessarily say that I've chosen them. They sometimes have just fallen in my lap, and choosing the right one and being a good connection for the right path that I was on at the time. When I started my position that I'm in right now, I got to a small university. I had just gotten from graduate school, and I was trying to figure out, where am I going in this faculty line? I don't really know where I'm supposed to fit. I don't know how I'm supposed to deal with questions if I have a student that has an issue that needs to be solved. And there really wasn't a pattern or a place for us to go for mentors. So I went to our department, so I went to the department chair, of course, and I said, what do I do? And he said, well, you can come to me with any questions, but I would suggest you find a faculty member that you would work with. Well, again, there really wasn't just one, because somebody is better than someone else at a certain task, and they fit to this responsibility a little bit better than another. So I found that it was best for me to choose about two or three different people, depending on the topic or the issue that I would work with. For example, one faculty member, students absolutely adored him. So if I came to him with ideas of how do you get students involved, this one's driving me crazy, I can't get this class to work right, how do you get your students going, how do you get them to do this, how do you get them to do that, he was great. But when it went to research, he didn't have a good focus on research, and I didn't have a good support system that way. So I went to another faculty member for that. And it just happens he turned into our department chair, and as his focus and his support for young faculty looking for promotion and tenure, he started working with me, putting my name on grants, and he'd say, your name is here, now you have to do this in the project. He wouldn't ask if you had time, he would just put you on it. Or he would write a paper, and he would put your name on it and say, okay, you're doing the statistics, or you're doing this part of it, you're doing that part of it. And for me, that's exactly where I needed to be in getting motivated and getting experience in a mentor. When you are picking a mentor, sometimes you have the opportunity of them falling into your lap, and it's just a perfect experience, especially with like an academic advisor for graduate school. Sometimes they're not necessarily the right one. Sometimes they may have their own motives and competition for you, so do be careful that they're the right personality, that they have your goals and theirs in mind and not just their own. After you've finished working with somebody, let's say graduate school, or maybe you've moved on to a promotion or a different stage in your career, continue talking to them, keep them updated as to where your progress is, because they still will have an interest in you, they've invested time in you. So keep them updated where you're going, they want to hear how you're doing. And for me, from the teaching aspect, it makes me feel better to hear that some of my students have actually heard what I told them years ago, and it meant something to them. So I know it's the same way with people that maybe have served as your mentor. And if you ever have the opportunity maybe to put them into a project or maybe to acknowledge them, if you look back in the CSA News, I actually wrote a little article for the Early Career Members Committee in the CSA News a few years ago on mentoring, and one of the things I did, I listed their names in there, and everybody that I had listed in there, they all emailed me and said, hey, I know you're talking about me, thanks. That means something, and it's something that we appreciate. So if you could thank them, acknowledge them, keep them up to date, then that's a little bit of a boost in their ego as well.
First of all, welcome. I think this is a wonderful opportunity to bring all of us together in one place with a common interest. I'm Lori Snyder, and I'm hearing the same themes coming out from both of our panelists so far. Where I can take this conversation is based on my experiences with the Golden Opportunity Scholars Group. It's an undergraduate group where I was first serving as co-chair to select select the students to participate in the program, but then second, to follow up is to match them with a mentor based on their descriptions. If their goals were to be more internationally focused or interested in biotechnology or genetics or plant breeding, it was kind of a very huge task to take a student who you want them to be successful in that program and to find a professor that matches with their goals. And so in progress, I pay very, very close attention to what the students' objectives were, where they wanted to take their career, to find them a match in that process. And luckily, I have been keeping track of how those matches have worked over the years, and it seems to be very successful when the student and also the mentor have clearly written down what their goals are and to match them as close as possible. But over the course of my career, I've held the position to mentor several undergraduates, but I've now moved into a position where I'm in a tenure track. So I'm mentoring graduate students and also seeking tenured professors to mentor me. And it is a process where you're continually checking to see if you're on track yourself and also helping keep the graduate students and focus on where their goals are. So I think the most successful part, for me at least in my career currently, is we have a group at my university where the professors are really selected to mentor you. You don't necessarily have a process on that selection. And that can be good and also can be somewhat dangerous if they're not exactly lining up to where you think your focus could be or your assets could be strongly more supported. So with that in mind, I have went out to seek other colleagues who really match where I feel like my strengths are in teaching. And I seek the highest potential role. For example, I've gone to the Center for Equity Teaching to find mentors that are leading university, not just a department. And I think that's a really important part, that if you want to be the best in your field, you need to seek the highest mentor relationships possible, and that they see and understand your goals. So it all goes back to, what are your goals, where do you want to go with those goals, and where do you see your career moving. So in that regard, that's been very helpful for me to take, I've had to take that initiative, and I think that goes for any person at any level of your career. It's undergraduate, graduate, professor status. You need to align yourself to where you want to go and make sure that they match and you meet those objectives. I'm curious, just to know our audience a little bit better, how many of you are currently in graduate school? Okay. And perhaps you're now thinking about applying for a PhD or moving on to be an assistant professor. How many are actually in that category of assistant professor? Okay, so we have most of you graduate audience. So in that regard, when I was currently doing my PhD at North Carolina State, I was heavily involved in being a teaching assistant, and to me that was very valuable for my career because that gave me an opportunity to become involved, being mentored by other faculty than my main advisor. And he continually reminded me, well, you have your PhD to finish, but keep in mind that you need to also work on the objectives of making yourself the best teacher possible. And if you can align yourself with many experiences with teaching or getting experience or becoming or sitting in a teacher's meeting and seeing what it's like on the other side, being the assistant or associate level or full professor, where they see what drives their career in helping students, then I think that makes you become a much more approachable teaching assistant and aligning with helping the undergraduates move through their career. And you become then a mentoring role for undergraduates. And even if you are currently in that position, I think as a grad student, if you can become a mentor for an undergraduate, that's going to help you in the long run as you move forward and apply for early career awards positive relationships, keeping connected with those undergraduate students or other graduate students along your career, you know, keeping your networks alive, and as I mentioned, thanking people who have made an impact in your life are extremely valuable, because you never know when you have to go back and say, I need a letter of support, or I'm at this position of my career. So those are my perspectives currently, and I'm looking forward to interacting with questions when we get through this part of this session. Dr. Cooper.
Well, first I'd like to thank the Fellow Career Member Committee for this opportunity to talk with you. I've long been concerned about regarding the mission in the education of the graduate students. It's how to deal with the politics you encounter once you get on your job. And because it's not taught formally, this is where a mentor is very important. So I certainly support what the panelists have said about the need for a good mentor. As I indicated, I've long been concerned about this mission of an education of what you can anticipate in terms of politics. I, like some of you, was raised on a farm. There's not much politics in farming. I thought I was going to be a farmer. Uncle Sam intervened. I was in service during the Korean War, and then I had the GI Bill and was able to go to college. But I went to college for 4 years undergraduate, 5 years graduate training, and nowhere along that training did this subject of politics ever came up. So when I got on my first job, I thought, gee, you know, all I got to do is good research, publish my research, and live happily ever after. Well, I found out there was more to it than that. Whether you realize it or not, when you join the university system or the USDA system, you're entering into a career where there's competition. Competition for professional advancement. And because of the competition, politics becomes a factor. Now, I'm talking about politics, I'm not talking about running for office. I'm talking about interacting with your coworkers and your supervisors. And this is a subject that, unfortunately, is often missed in our education. My own experience was that I failed to get a good mentor, and so I had to learn about politics the hard way, by trial and error. And frankly, some of the errors resulted in some very undesirable circumstances. And it was a hard lesson to learn. So I thought if I could put together what I learned about politics in my 4-year career into a form that, into a book that would be available to everyone, that this might be very helpful. So this book, as mentioned, is in the back of the room there, and we'll have a book signing afterwards. It's called Introduction to Academic Politics and Agricultural Research. And it's composed, the first chapter is a little bit about the description of the administrative structure in the university system versus the USDA ARS system. They're a little bit different, so it has some political implications. But the bulk of the book is composed of 15 political lessons. And once learned, will help you understand the politics and navigate the politics you're likely to encounter as you proceed in your career. Now, time doesn't permit to discuss all 15, but I'll mention 2 or 3 of them, and hopefully this may generate your interest to purchase a personal copy for your own reference. Lesson number 1, which is probably the most important, and one that surprised me and may surprise you, is that doing a good job is often not enough. This sounds like a contradiction. You're hired to do a job, you do a good job, you should reap the rewards. And in some environments, that may be true. But too often, if you ignore the interaction with your colleagues and your supervisors, it can lead to some problems. Now, let me just give you a couple simple examples so you understand what I'm talking about. A young woman just out of high school took a job at a local factory where they're making coils by hand and being paid by piecework. It turned out she was very quick with her hands, and in a short period of time she could make more coils per hour than anybody else and more money. But she noticed she'd been ostracized by her coworkers, and eventually the environment became so hostile she left. Not because she wasn't doing a good job, she was doing too good a job. The other workers, and rightly so, were concerned the company lowered the rate they paid per coil. This is the kind of interaction I'm talking about. Another young man told me about his experience working in a factory. He was young and eager to make a good impression. And one day, one of the older workers cornered him in the men's locker room and slammed him against the wall and said, "Slow down, son, you're making the rest of us look bad." Well, does that same thing apply at the PhD level in agriculture research? Unfortunately, yes, it does. You're in a competitive profession. Let me just cite a hypothetical situation. Suppose you, with a new PhD, armed with the latest technology and knowledge and the enthusiasm and energy of youth, join a department with a lot of senior faculty. In a period of 2 or 3 years, you make a major discovery that then lying under the nose of the senior faculty for many years and they never stumble onto it. Do you think they'd be real happy for you? Or do you think there might be some resentment that you come in and show them? I think you know the answer to that. Now let me give a real life example. This young man joined a major university, a prominent agronomy department. In a period of 3 or 4 years, he then tried a new production system that could increase crop yields 10 to 15%. He proudly took his data to the senior faculty in the extension, and he was dismayed. They wouldn't accept his data. Well, he was young and perfectly naive and impatient. He said, "Well, fine, I'll just bypass him and go directly to the farmer." So that's what he did. And in a short period of time, it became a widely accepted production practice. He received all kinds of recognition for his accomplishments. And one day, he was called into the head office and informed that his position was being terminated. Talk about being blindsided. He knew he was doing good work. He had naively assumed that once the farmer's experience verified his research, that the senior faculty and the extension would come on board and there would be no problem. But they had a different solution. They used their political clout to get rid of this young man who'd come in to embarrass him. Now, I hope this never happens to any of you, but you need to be politically aware. This is part of your profession. You need to develop your political skill. Let me cite just a couple of other examples of where doing a good job was not enough. This appeared in USA Today, the news last week. Israeli chemist wins the Nobel Prize. Israeli scientist Dan Shechtman was awarded the Nobel Prize in Chemistry on Wednesday for a discovery that faced skepticism and prompted his expulsion from his research team. Being right is not enough. You have to develop your political skills. That's part of your profession. Another reference. Best entrepreneur ever, Steve Jobs, knew all about being marginalized. Shortly after turning 30, he was forced out of a company he co-founded. He lost his job. This was the head of Apple. When he returned, he learned about politics and developed his political skills. And now the company, when he passed away last week, the company's worth $350 billion in market value. So even Steve Jobs had problems with politics. So I hope I'm impressing on you the importance of developing your political skill. Just a couple other things and I'll wrap it up. Evaluate your administrators. There are two kinds of administrators. There's a secure administrator and an insecure. You're fortunate if you have a secure administrator. They are characterized by letting you do your job with minimum interference. They're approachable, can be trusted to treat you fairly. But you're unfortunate if you have an insecure administrator. They're characterized by wanting to micromanage, wanting to control everything, cause excessive meetings, and wanting to flaunt their authority so everybody knows they're the boss. Now, if you have that kind of administrator, you have to be very careful how you work with them. You have to avoid trying to be challenging their authority. It helps if you understand that their actions are motivated by their insecurity. I might add here that some of you will probably end up in administration. Ask yourself, what kind of administrator will I be? Always consider the political consequences of your actions. Obviously, this young man who bypassed the extension service didn't think about that. He was naive. He didn't realize that could be a problem. But you need to consider that. Patience. One of the most valuable tools of politics is patience. Had he been more patient with the senior faculty extension, he probably could have worked something out. But, as they say, he tries to push it through too fast. Be careful about making too many enemies, both in the university system and the USDA system. Promotion and tenure is determined by peer review. What do you think happens if some of the pure panelists are serious enemies that you've made? Now, because it's a competitive profession, sometimes you can't avoid making enemies because you have an honest disagreement. But my message is, don't make them necessary enemies. They come home to haunt you. Well, I'd like to end on a positive note. And that is, once you develop your political skills, politics can be used for good. Let me give you a couple of examples. There was a young man who was being harassed by his insecure supervisor, just giving him all kinds of problems. Finally, in frustration, he took the risk, and I say risk advisedly, because when you go over your supervisor's head, there's risk involved. He went to a higher-level supervisor and said, look, this is what's going on. He says, I have to live with it, and I will. The impact was immediate. Once his supervisor learned it was to his political disadvantage to keep harassing this young man, it stopped abruptly. One other example, a young man was up for promotion by a peer panel, and his promotion was denied. Well, he'd served on several of these peer panels, so he knew what was required, and so he filed a formal appeal to have a new committee appointed. His immediate supervisor said, ah, no, it's a waste of time. Again, he thought about it a while and said, well, decided to take the risk. He went to the next level supervisor and said, look, you know, if appeal never works, this makes a mockery of the appeal process. Fortunately, he received support from the higher level administrator. A new panel was appointed, and his promotion sailed right through. Do you think this new panel may have been influenced by the fact that this high level supervisor thought it ought to be reviewed? Sure it did. Politics can be used for good. It's just an important part of your professionalism. Well, let me just conclude by, I'd like to quote today, I have my book there in the back, and I hope some of you will be interested enough to purchase the book. But it's, I'd like to quote the dedication in the front page of my book. It's to present and future graduate students and early career scientists in the College of Agriculture. I wrote this book for you. I hope you will take advantage of it. This book, the purpose of this book, as I said earlier, one of the problems with the mentoring system is too many people get missed. And what do you do with the people that get missed? Well, one way to do it, as I said earlier, is to publish it in a book so it can be available to everybody. So this book was published to reach those that may have been missed, to level the playing field for everybody, not just those who have been mentored. And the information in this book should help you understand and navigate the politics you're likely to encounter as you pursue your career. Thank you.
Thank you. There's time for questions, several questions, and the panelists can answer. If you have questions for all of them or just individuals, the floor is open. Yeah, the question, I'll repeat the question, is if you've, and it's one I've had too, if you've graduated from academia, you've moved on, and now you're out in a working position, what is some of the mechanism, what should you do about selecting a mentor or mentors, and what any suggestions, tips on that part of the process?
Well, I'll take a stab at it. Once you're established in a position, of course, in my case, it was in industry, I think then you look to, who are the leaders in a particular field that you're involved with. I know when I was at Extension Soybean Specialists at NC State, I looked at Dr. Cooper's work with soybean production, you know, as even though he didn't realize it, he was kind of one I looked forward to, and he, back then, I think he had an experiment where you put chicken wire up to keep the beans from lodging, you know. I would look to leaders that was in the industry. He was, of course, looking for high yields of soybeans, you know, and of course, I said, being a soybean specialist at NC State for years, I mean, that was my field, and I was, so you look to the leaders, and then when I joined the industry, there were the whole university system, like the Potash Phosphate Institute, you know, they had people that were involved with fertility, and especially when I joined a company that involved with potassium fertilizers, and I looked to those areas, you know, for expertise and for, you know, people that I could associate with, and we had a mutual interest.
I'd like to just comment. I don't want to leave the impression that this book is going to eliminate the need for a good mentor. You need to find a good mentor at the location where you're at, because they know the inner workings, they know the power structure, they know how the politics has worked in the local situation you're in. So certainly take advantage of good mentors at your local location.
I'm not sure on the question either.
Okay. I'm a teaching assistant. We have investigation. question is a difficult question, Smiler. When I'm planning to study the crop stress, I have many points to study about. Sometimes I find that I want to study the drought tolerance through studying plant species. Then another point, I find a more interesting thing about drought tolerance from a different point of view. So how can I decide which special point I should specialize? All of them are interesting. When you ask, go down to the plant program center, find it also more interesting as a solution for drought tolerance. So I'm very confused.
Well, certainly there's a lot of judgment we are. One of the things you have to find political skills and learn to judge people. You need to judge who you'll be supportive, people who may not be. Just an example of this, if you decided to seek help from a higher level supervisor, you need to evaluate that higher level supervisor. If he's an insecure administrator, your chances of getting support are not very good. On the other hand, if he is secure, then you can have some assurance that you'll help you out. I'm not sure I'm answering your question, only as to say that you have to learn to be a judge of people.
I would also like to address what you're referring to, particularly with if you're involved in teaching and starting to explore your research opportunities and your focus. One thing to keep in mind is how large of a plate do you want to carry? So you have a lot of interests, and you're starting to fill up those interests on your plate, and then you look at what you have, and then maybe you're sampling or tasting a little bit in the stress physiology of certain areas, and you find, as you're saying, you're going into that area, and you're focusing more and more and more, and you find more things interesting. At some point in time, you really need to sit back and say, what are my goals and what are my objectives? And if certain area, then pursue that area and complete it. You know, from what I understand your question is you have a lot of interest coming around and perhaps you're not sure what direction to move in, decide to stay in. It's really hard because I know you're eager to learn, you're eager to discover all these new aspects of science, but at the same time, you don't want to be too watered down in multiple areas. You want to create a focus for yourself and keep that focus. And I cannot reiterate how much I've probably gone through this myself. I'm very energetic. I have lots of ideas, and I want to go here and there and everywhere. But at the same time, that's a disadvantage to yourself, and that you probably need to step back and say, okay, this particular time frame within this year, I'm going to focus on this and complete the project. So as you move forward in your career, make sure you have set yourself that goal for that year. I'm going to work on this area, and then complete that work so that you can move to the next level of interaction of whatever the science that you want to discover. Does that help answer your question? Aaron?
I think related to that, as far as picking a dissertation topic, you have to think about, okay, when I go to interview for jobs here in 4 or 5 years, or however long it takes to complete the process, which research topic might I be best positioning myself to be more marketable as someone interviewing for jobs? So what are the trends in our industry? What areas does it look like there'll be jobs opening in? And if that's more stress physiology or if that's more nutrient related issues, to that's something to think about is pick a topic that you're interested in, but one that will allow you to market yourself better when you go out and start interviewing for jobs.
One other item for that is in choosing a mentor and finding a mentor, whether you're in industry or whether you're in academics, sometimes it's about finding somebody who really has your interest at heart, and if you find that person, that they can tell you and help you focus those goals, because the hardest thing as a new person getting into your career is to say no and prioritize what you have to do. And having a mentor to say, whoa, you're on too many committees, you got to back off a little bit, that really helped me. And being able to say no to the right people in the right time, so you're avoiding the academic politics, but
knowing that it's okay to say no on occasion. You don't have to say yes to everything and every idea.
And I just want to back up what Dr. Patton was speaking about, is that really know your skill set and what your strengths are. So when you go to focus on your PhD topic or take a career path as an assistant professor, make sure you have that skill set in hand, so that way when you are selecting to be on committees or selecting to do, or people are selecting you, you want to do things that come the easiest and you can complete the fastest. And that way you can move to the next, what you really want to accomplish or what you really want to do. But always do your best at whatever you say you're going to say yes to. Because the minute you say yes and you don't complete that project, then that goes back to what Dr. Cooper saying, politics will start to come out. And you'll soon learn what you did wrong or what you didn't do. We'll start.
And I would add that the politics are certainly in industry too, so even worse. I mean, you come in, you think you're doing things right, and you come in, you know, and there could be a whole change that's happened in 24 hours. So, but I was lucky. I guess I answered about 5 different corporate identities. And probably the reason I was saved, because I wasn't in the corporate office. I was in North Carolina in the home, working out on my own.
But again, this young guy lost his job. He really lost it. It wasn't all the cup of the department's fault. No, he was just naive. Had he attended this session, he would have done things a lot different. And that's the point I'm trying to make. And politics is not all bad. It's just, what's bad is when you don't know it's an important part of your profession. And so I just emphasize that. Just make it part of your career. Learn how to work with people. Learn how to people sensitive.
I have a question, mostly for Dr. Braden, I guess. You mentioned when you were a grad student, you looked to other, like the committee members, you said, you're teaching and learning from this. Maybe that wasn't the focus of the major. Did you find that it was your major advisor was okay with that? There wasn't any rift because maybe you felt someone else had better strengths than they did? And just some advice on that.
Well, in my specific example, I did have a fabulous major advisor. However, it was a little bit of a frustration to him because I was taking away from my time for research, and his goal was to get me in and out and use the grant money as quickly as I possibly could and be done. But I did ask him before I really invested any time in any lab activities, any involvement with teaching. I went to him and I said, listen, I want to take this class because Iowa State has a class and many university students preparing future faculty. And a part of that was involving yourself in teaching practicums and mentors. And they had a program for that. And I asked before I took those classes, I said, I know it's going to take a couple of classes away from time, but is that okay with you? And he grumbled a little bit, and he said, well, but I know that's what you want to do, so I'll let you do it. So for me, it was more that I went to him, I was upfront with him and honest and saying that was really what I wanted to do. And of course, I knew that wasn't his goal for me, but he was supportive in what I wanted to do. And I was willing to do a little extra load because I got to do what I wanted to, but I also had obligations to him for the research.
Other questions?
I realize these mentoring relationships can be formal or informal, but I wondered how you went about had them evaluate you or documented anything. I realize you need to document and evaluate, and I know this part for almost everything you try to do, to say you have those types of relationships and are trying them to improve. So how have you gone about getting any sort of evaluations from these mentoring relationships?
I can actually cover that one because, thank goodness, I successfully went through my promotion and tenure process, finished this summer, and that was part of what I did. It was not expected of me,
but that was part of what I did as in putting my peer evaluations. I went back to, because I've continued with Mary Wheaton Hopton working outside after graduate school, working with the class and continuing working with her. So I said, hey, you mind writing me a letter? Could you write me a letter of support? And then she had years of saying, I've worked with her in this experience, this experience, this experience, and it really made my packet a lot stronger. And for me, it was just as simple as just asking them for a letter of support.
That about wraps up our time. Good questions. Some of the questions were the same ones I had, and good information. And I'm sure that any of the folks up here, if you still have questions later on, be happy to speak with you, or you can get in touch with them too, even later. So with that, I want to say thanks to all the panel members. And just a couple of things to mention as we close out the session is that the survey sheets that you were passed out when you walked in, if you'll be sure to fill those out and just hand them to the person at the back of the room when you leave, and that helps to let the societies know about the sessions. And then a couple of other things to mention is the Early Career Members Committee website. That's 24/7 is a good place to go for additional information directed to early career members. And one way you can get there is from any of the society's main pages. This one's the Crop Science Society of America, and down here in the lower right-hand corner are the links to the Early Career Members website. It's the same whether it's if you go to Agronomy Society or you've Crop Science Society or Soil Science Society in the same location there. I'd like to mention too, there's a grant writing navigation workshop that's coming up Wednesday from 10:30 to 12. That might be one a session that you'd be interested in coming to. And then there's a session also on writing cover letters and resumes, working on CVs here at 10:30. Another session that you may find very helpful starts at 10:30 and I think runs for an hour. Right here, same room. So with that, thank you all for coming, and let's give our panels a big round of applause.